legitimate psychic powers. Somebody showed me a video of this guy with psychic powers who could fly through the air. I think it was David Copperfield. Or... So, any lay people with legitimate psychic, if they did have psychic powers, they would not tell anybody. Imagine you had psychic powers and you could predict who was going to win the next horse race. What would happen to you? Number one, you'd be so rich by now that no one would actually be able to get close to you. If you could read people's minds, they would give you a job at the airport. You wouldn't need to go through the security camera. You'd just be able to see, yeah, she's okay. No, she's a terrorist. No, she's... That would save a lot of time in the airport queues. Have you ever had to wait in line to get all your bags checked and all sorts of other stuff, and people had to take off their shoes and their belts? And oh, sometimes. Now, I don't have a belt. And all these other, have to wait in line, and people take this out and that out, and jeepers, it really takes a long time. All we need is one person with psychic powers to say, yeah, you can go through, yeah, you've got a knife, yeah, you've got... But actually on that, an interesting story. This was one monk. I won't say what his name is. Still alive, a Thai monk. He arrived in San Francisco Airport, in international flight from Thailand, and one of my friends, Ajahn Pasano, don't you know who he is, he received him at the airport, waiting in the, you know, where you receive the visitors once they come out to the customs. And this is United States, homeland security, where they're really afraid of people bringing bombs into the country and blowing up aircraft and goodness knows what else. It's the toughest security in the world. And this guy comes through. Ajahn Pasano, he's got his bag. You see me with my little bag. And one of the zips was broken. So he's fiddling around with it, trying to fix the zip. And this monk saw it and said, oh, what's wrong with your bag? Oh, the zip's broken. Never mind, he said. So he opened up his robe. And inside he had this vest with all his pockets on. And he got out a screwdriver and a pair of pliers. And he just come right on. This is not checking baggage. This is actually what you bought in the aircraft. He said, what else have you got in there? Oh, I've got about three knives, screwdrivers. Had a whole tool set in there. And I said, you've taken that on board? He said, yeah, I do it all the time. What happens when you go through the security? He said, I just have loving kindness meditation, very strong, and it never goes beep, beep, beep. And there's a guy, and if they gave him a pat down, I mean, he'd be in jail for 100 years. He takes these three knives, I mean, long ones, on the aircraft into the United States. Now, that's a fellow with psychic powers. And that's one thing, it's well known. If you ask any other monk about this, he says that his karma or something, he has to wear this really heavy vest with lots of pockets in, and he puts all the tools in there and just goes in the aircraft, goes all over the world, no problem at all. But also, when they checked his passport, they found the guy had a diplomatic visa with no expiry date. To enter the United States whenever he wanted. And I wonder, what the heck? But even diplomats, you still have to go through the security. How come you've got such a passport? Such a visa. And the story was that he happened to be in the Thai temple in Houston, Texas one day, and an engineer who was working in NASA called him up to ask him to come in to help out with a problem they had. Because NASA had just installed a mainframe computer system, the main number cruncher, hundreds of millions of dollars, or billion, I don't know how much it costs, but really big, big dollars, for the head of NASA, the headquarters of NASA. And they could not get it to work. All the experts in the whole of the United States, they flew them in first class, because every hour this computer was down was costing them so many hundreds of thousands of dollars. No one could fix up the computer. The best experts in the whole of North America. So this engineer who was working in NASA was a Thai, and he said, well, if the experts can't fix it up, Perhaps it's something supernatural. And I know the very person who could fix it. Just by good fortune, he's in the Thai temple right now. And you don't have to fly in first class, he's already here. You don't have to pay him a fee. Just give him a cup of tea and a bar of chocolate or whatever else it is. And they'll do anything for you, these monks. So they had nothing to lose. They invited this monk into the headquarters of NASA. Had to give them the security passes. He didn't need it. He can just go through these without a pass. He went into the mainframe computer room. He meditated, chanted, and then the computer worked perfectly. Absolutely. He fixed it where no one else could. And that's a true story, and the evidence is NASA, they've got contacts. They used their contacts and also had an act of gratitude to give this monk, a simple forest monk, a diplomatic visa with no expiry date, just in case they needed him in a hurry again. And that's what he's got in his passport. Now that's real psychic powers. So after this retreat, if you really follow the instructions, then when your computer crashes, no trouble at all, don't need to ring up IT support, just meditate, bit of chanting, and be perfect. That's psychic powers. Dear Ajahn, I just want to say how lovely it is getting smiles each day. And the ones doing it, you know exactly who you are. One lady for me, however, really stands out. The Asian lady. With the shaved head. On your right. That's not a lady. You are so sweet, and I know you are a beautiful person. Thank you for adding some sunshine to my day. Yeah, it's okay to smile. So it's nice to be able to give. You can't talk. You can always give your compassion and kindness with a beautiful smile. Dear Ajahn, are the various enlightenment experiences of different intensities, i.e. is dream entry the most intense, giving the initial break from samsara? This is a notion I get when I read Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond. Really? I didn't put that in there. You're reading into it. But, no. The enlightenment experiences, are they different intensities? I don't know about intensities, because there's no tension there at all. It's just different peace and stillness and freedoms. I don't like the word intense. It's just soft and peaceful and calm and free. So, no, they're not really different intensities. They're just different levels of peace. Your honourable loser. It's really nice when you make up new sort of ways. Instead of just, dear venerable or whatever, just have fun. Your honourable loser. My father is a farmman. He shoots lots of animals. He shoots to introduce pest species, and National Park supports his action. I am concerned about all the bad karma he's accruing. Do you have any suggestions on how to help him stop this? Keeping in mind he has no religious belief and is strongly against religion, with metta a fellow loser. Okay, well, it's really unfair that the people shoot the animals. So you go and train the animals, give them guns each, so it can be a fair fight. Would that be a good idea? Even the odds. Now, sometimes, this is one of the problems. When we start to think about introduced pests in Australia, they usually call them like the rabbits, the foxes, which will destroy a lot of habitat. But the biggest introduced pest in Australia is us. We human beings have done much more damage, especially the non-Aboriginals, which is all of you. So I think we should all be exterminated. We should have a cull. We're just growing, too many of us. So I think the kangaroos should get together and cull the human beings. And then we would know what it feels like. The trouble is pests. You start off with like termites. Kill the pests. Then you start off with bigger animals. Kill the feral cats. And kill the the wild dogs. And then you go to the next stage, kill the next pest, my husband. He really is a pest. Which means anything which irritates you, you try and get rid of. And that's not the way to have any peace and harmony. Instead of exterminating the pests, see if you can have tolerance towards the pests and live with them. Whether those pests are people of other religions, whether that's people you disagree with, those people who once were pests, you want to exterminate. You know, your partner, you know, your mother-in-law, whatever it is. How about changing your attitude and learn to be in peaceful coexistence with these people, all these things? Even if you don't like them, you can still be at peace with them. So that's one of the problems with the whole idea of exterminating pests. You end up with exterminating the Muslims, exterminating, the people of our Buddhism. This is terrible. Exterminate all the Mahayanists. Exterminate, because they're not the right Buddhists, you know, they're not the same as us. When you go down that line, you know, you can see where you get sort of terrorism from. So, your father's a farmer, he shoots lots of animals. How can you actually stop him? It's pretty difficult to stop him at this time. So what you can do, you can make lots of good karma and share it with him. That's about the best you can do. I don't know, I have any idea what to do. Oh, one thing you could do for your father, if he doesn't like religion, you can use that psychology which I use for a woman here. She was a Malaysian woman, married an Australian guy, came to our temple and really liked the teachings. And she often wanted her husband to come to the temple to learn some meditation, listen to these teachings. She told me it would do him the world of good. I know he would like it if he would just come once, but he refuses to come. Can you please give me some advice on how I can get my husband to at least have a look at Buddhism? I said, very easy to do. Buy one of my books, take it home, and as soon as you see your husband, tell him, darling, this is my book, keep your hands off it. That's all you need to do. And you know the psychology. If you ban your husband from doing something, say, absolutely no, you can't do this. Of course, when she was out shopping or something, said, what does he mean, keep my hands off this book? So he opened it up and he read it to the very end. He liked it so much, now he comes every week. That's a true story. So that's what you can do with your father. Buy, you know, a good Buddhist book, you know, one of my books or someone else's book. Take it to your father and say, well, you know, when I come to visit, this is the book I want to read. So, please, this is my religious book, you know, keep your hands off it. I don't want you desecrating it, okay, Dad? Leave it alone. And of course he'll read it. He has to. And who knows, he may sort of, you know, read it and enjoy it. That's my advice. Dear Ajahn, I was going through the picture frames where the monks take their meals at Bodhinyana and did not recognize two of the monks' names, Jnana Wimala and Jnana Deepa. Would you mind sharing their stories with us? Much better. Okay. In the dining area of Bodhinyana Monastery upstairs, we have all these pictures of inspiring monks and nun as well. There's one nun up there as well. Only one, but it's a start. It's because we need more nuns to be inspiring, so we can have more pictures of you up there. Jnana Wimala and Jnana Deepa. Jnana Wimala I know because I saw him once. Jnana Deepa I don't think I've ever met, but Jnana Wimala, he was a very, very good monk. I remember just once, I went to go to Sri Lanka, and I went to go and pay respects to Venerable Piyadasi, who was a very famous monk, now passed away. And in his temple there was also staying Bhikkhu Bodhi, you know, who translates all his books. So I went to pay respects to him as well. And he said, oh, there's these other monks here as well. So they had another monk who I really respected and also Jnana Wimala. He said, just go and pay respects to him. So I went to pay respects to him, and that was actually with Bianca's deceased husband, who passed away some years ago. And with him and another monk, we went inside to pay respects, and Jnana Wimala then gave us a Dhamma discourse for 1 hour. And I will tell you that that's the best Dhamma teaching I've ever heard in my life as a monk. Brilliant teaching. And I went up there just so inspired. And as we came out, Bhikkhu Bodhi was waiting for him. What were you doing in there? Wow, we just heard such an amazing Dhamma discourse. You know, from Venerable Jnana Vimala. And Bhikkhu Bodhi said, that's really unfair. I've lived here for years and he's never taught me Dhamma, not once. He never does that. He was really upset. So it's very lucky. So I remember that. That's why I always remember that was a very great monk. That's one of the stories. There are many others. I think actually somebody, they contacted me last year. They said they're putting together a book about the life of that monk, Jnana Vimala, because he was a very, very good monk. And there's a lot of storybooks coming out about him. He was a very, very brilliant monk. Yeah, he's a German, lived in Sri Lanka so many years. He had no possessions. He would walk around the island, staying at different places all the time. Very, very, just one of the ideal monks. Dear Ajahn, when we are in the situation of dull, bored, sad, pain, etc., how do we apply this as good enough? Easy. I say you're dull, but at least you're not depressed. So if you're depressed, well, at least I'm not suicidal. And if you're suicidal, well, at least I haven't killed myself yet. There's still a chance. So look on the positive side, for goodness sake. And if you're sad, well, it's nice to be sad, because when you're really sad, other people, they give you compassion and kindness. If you're sick, then people look after you. My trouble is, I'm never sick. So I miss out on all the compassion and kindness of other people. So when you're sick, it's your wonderful gift for other people. So you're sick. Say, now I'm sick, you can make good karma by looking after me. This is your opportunity. Because the Buddha actually said that. Looking after the sick is like looking after the Buddha. So once you're very sick, please tell other people, look, I'm sick. You know, Daniel, I'm sick today. Can you please give me breakfast in bed? And this is my menu. And please give me this. Because I'm sick, you know, I just need special foods. You know, I need Singapore congee. I need porridge. So if you are sick, you have great advantages. And if you're in pain, etc. Oh, if you're in pain, again, it means you can have special, you can actually have extra cushions because you're in pain, poor thing. And you can sleep in without feeling guilty because you're in pain. And you don't have to get jhanas because you're in pain. So just lower your expectations. So this is actually how we can say this is good enough. Because in life you will always have times when you are sad. And times when you're happy, because sadness is just the space between two moments of happiness. So when you're sad, it's brilliant. It's not going to last. Happiness is coming soon. Woohoo! And if you're happy, that really is sad. This isn't going to last. And if you have pain, well, as Ajahn chose to tell me, you're either going to get better or you're going to die. Either way, it will not last. So wonderful. So that's why we say this is good enough. So look, keep the positive side of life. It could be worse. You know that person was really depressed? He was actually in Perth. He was like a painter, quite a well-known artist. He had a motorbike accident. And he crushed his hand. And they had no choice, had to amputate his hand. And that was the hand he used to paint his pictures with. His whole life was destroyed with that accident. The thing he loved the most, his career, was destroyed when he lost his hand. So, when he was able to go out from hospital, he just decided to commit suicide. Life had no meaning when you can't do the thing you love the most. So he climbed up to one of these big office towers in St. George's Terrace, you know, the central business district of Perth. He found an empty office, climbed out onto the ledge, was about to jump off to his death. But he saw this man. He just so lucky. He He saw this man with no arms on the street below, dancing for joy, dancing up and down. And he had no arms at all. And he thought, my God, I've only lost a hand. And there's a fellow who's lost both arms, both hands and the arms as well. And he's so happy. And seeing that, he gave up his wish to kill himself. He ran to the elevator, got down very quickly, and ran after that man with no arms. It's quite easy to find. Not that many people with no arms in the street. And when he found him, he just almost like tried to hug him. Thank you so much. He told his brief story. I lost my painting hand, and I was so depressed. And there, here is you, you've got no arms at all, dancing down the street for joy. You've changed my life, sir. You saved it. Now please tell me your secret. How do you dance for joy, having lost all your arms? And the armless man said, look, sir, I'm not dancing for joy. I'm just trying to scratch my bum. How else does a man with no arms scratch the itch? You dance up and down. Ooh, ooh. That's one of my favourite jokes. Some of you like that. What should I do if a friend always looks for me but I don't feel comfortable with her? Eagerness. Oh, if they look for you, it depends. Now, if they're looking for you because they're the police or the CIA, they get a disguise. If it's because, you know, they want to start a relationship with you, if, I don't know who you are, but you know, if she's a girl, you're a boy, you can say, sorry, I'm gay. And if she says, so am I, say that I've got a disease. Or something. You can get a bit of makeup, put a few spots on. And they'll leave you alone. Tell them you've got SARS or something communicable. So it's pretty easy to hide from people. Goodness gracious, this is not a question, it is an essay. Oh, okay. To all the people who may have given a fright today with my melodic scream. Oh, okay. Ajahn, you know who I am. Do I? Who does melodic scream? I mean, they mean the chanting. I'm sorry, it was finally my payday today. And I had, for me, maybe not too many of you, a beautiful meditation. Hallelujah. I think that's what it was. Yeah, that's right. Afterwards, I went for a lovely long walk and was just very content with my own company and at peace. I did expect to meet with a big reptile on the way back. I know these ones don't bite and do not harm humans. I am Australian and I have grown up in farm-like conditions during my childhood. But forgive me if I'm about to step on something like that. It gives me a fright. I even have a couple at home that I know about. I have affectionately named the two bobtails, Bob and Baby Bob. Although I am rethinking these names now, as my granddad is too lazy to call my boyfriend by his real name, and so instead calls him Bob too. He must think your boyfriend is a lizard. Anyway. Shit happens. Hope I made your retreat interesting, meta from one of the night owls. These are just these little bobtail lizards. They don't do any harm to anybody. They just crawl around minding their own business. And at night time is when they do their walking meditation. They crawl backwards, mindfully crawling forward, mindfully crawling backwards. And you know, kids in Australia pick them up. They're very sort of soft and easy and kind. And these are the Buddhist bobtails. And they're even much more, they're all vegetarians, they don't eat you. How can a little thing like that eat you? So if you screamed, never mind, just don't do it again. Sometimes my heartbeat becomes prominent over the breath while meditating, it becomes difficult to follow the breath. What should I do? Stop the heart beating. Nice. Like anything else, if you think it's a problem, the attention goes there and it really does become a problem. And you can calm the breath down, but please don't try and calm your heartbeat down. Otherwise, you know, you end up in hospital and I get sued. So just take the attention away from the heartbeat and just put it on the breath. So sometimes that happens. That's a distraction meditation when you start to become aware of the heartbeat. Just leave it alone. So that's one thing where you really have to let go. And don't worry about, don't focus on the heartbeat, because that will never take you into deep meditation. Thank you, Ajahn. Today after I'm interviewing with you about we talking outside meditation room, we are so happy now and very enjoyed to do meditation. We thank you, Ajahn, again. Remember last night in the question, somebody said about talking outside the meditation room, and I said, bad karma. And they took that seriously. Look, I'm only joking. That wasn't really bad karma. It was only tiny, itsy bitsy bad karma. Much worse things people do in this place. So that's no problem at all. It's all finished with. So in Buddhism, we don't carry around the past. We just let it go. Acknowledge, forgive, learn. It's done with. So very good. So you're not a bad disciple. You're okay. Every time I practice, I will die, that's for sure. Something bad happens. Of course. I will die, that's for sure. No, it doesn't happen. My child got sick badly more than 3 times. I will not practice again. Can you explain? Children get sick. Whether you do, I will die, that's for sure, or I will live and that's a lie. Whatever you say, kids get sick. They can't, and it's good being sick as a kid. All the doctors tell you that when the child gets sick when they're very young, they build up their immunity, they get stronger, so they don't get sick when they're old. So it's brilliant. What you're doing, if your child is getting sick more than 3 times, when you say, I will die, that's for sure, you're strengthening your child's immune system. It's a wonderful thing you're doing. So they're getting very, very strong because of that. So you should do it more often. What's wrong with being sick? Sick is natural, as I keep on saying. I ask people, hands up if you've never been sick in your life. No one puts their hands up. Everyone has been sick. In fact, if you've never been sick at all in your whole life, you would be weird. You'd be such a medical anomaly that they would do tests upon you. They'd get you in laboratories and find out how come you've never ever been sick while everyone else has. So it is not normal to never be sick. There'll be something wrong with you if you've never been sick. So actually it's right to be sick. So that's why I tell everybody, and doctors in Perth know this, when you next have to go to the doctor because you're sick, you should always tell the doctor, Doctor, there's something right with me. I'm sick again. And some of the doctors I know tell me, okay, yeah. When people come into their room and they say, Doctor, there's something right with me, I'm sick. I know where they got that one from. Another Ajahn Brahm groupie. But what it does, it takes away the stigma from being sick. There's nothing wrong with being sick. It's part of life. So if your child is sick, well done. They're getting strong. So it's not because you do the chanting, I will die, that's for sure. Don't be so superstitious. Dear Ajahn, whilst I'm not concerned about death, yeah, sure, even much about physical disability later in life or tomorrow, who knows? The possibility of mental impairment is more worrying. Being trapped within your own body, paraplegia and the like may be bearable when the mind is free, but being trapped by your own mind seems far worse. Are there instances in which people with mental disabilities are still able to achieve stillness jhanas? Everybody has got mental instabilities or disabilities until they're fully enlightened. You're all crazy. You're crazy with greed, hatred and delusion. So said the Buddha. That's the real mental instability. But, never mind, we can fix that. This is Jhana Grove Mental Hospital. And judging by some of these questions, you are very hard cases. We know that happened once. In the early years of our monastery in England, they had this monastery in Sussex. Now, those of you who don't know England, Sussex is a very high-class area. Many rich people live down there. And they wanted to do a retreat, and there was this clinical psychiatrist, the head psychiatrist in the local hospital for those with mental disabilities. And she didn't get paid a lot. She managed to buy this old mansion in one of these English villages. And the mansion had like stables and lots of rooms. And so she said, why not use this for a retreat? Just for a weekend retreat. You know, the stables were, you could clean them out and that could be the meditation hall. There's a few rooms around dormitory style. And so about 20 or 30 people went on one of the first retreats in England for our monastery. Now this was in an English village, okay? You know how nosy English people are. Now they peer through the curtains to see what's going on with their neighbours. And when it got time to do the walking meditation, all about 20 or 30 of these meditators went out into the garden to do walking meditation. Mindfully moving your feet. Walking like zombies. All not looking around, just mindfully, and then turning around and going back again. Now one of the old ladies in the village happened to look through the curtains and they saw 20 or 30 people doing walking meditation. And she knew that that house had been bought by the head of the local hospital for those with mental disabilities. And she thought, oh my God, she's brought her patients home with her. And she called the police. And the police arrived to take all the meditators back to the mental hospital. And it took a lot of convincing that these were actually sane people. So talk about mental disabilities. I think many people here qualify. Where's it going here? Okay, but don't be afraid. Because you don't know what's going to happen. And obviously, if you practice your meditation and you get a strong mind, the chances of you having mental disabilities are very, very small. But if they do happen, like Ajahn Chah, he had a stroke. Basically, he was working too hard. He had a sort of stroke, and so he lost a lot of his brain ability. He couldn't speak. But what did he do all that time? Was that 8 or 9 years, I think, he was incapacitated. But we know what he did because we'd always have like monks looking after him. And one evening, this is one story amongst many, one evening he stopped breathing. And they had a nurse. Well, actually, let's go back a bit. After his stroke, all the monks had a meeting and said, what should we do about our teacher? And they all decided, let's have no medical intervention. Just let nature take its course. And he will die. He's lived a very good life. He gave lots of teachings. Waste of time preserving the body. Just let him go. And when they made that decision, the king of Thailand objected. He heard about it and said, no, you keep that monk alive at all costs. And so, in Thailand, if the king says something, the monks will obey. They won't sort of do anything. So, the king would supply, at his expense, a male nurse, on a roster, 8-hour shifts. Throughout those 9 years, the king paid for that. So, have a male nurse, and usually 2 or 3 monks looking after Ajahn Chah. And one evening, Ajahn Chah stopped breathing. He actually did this many times. And the male nurse freaked out. He knew Ajahn Chah would die one day, but he didn't want Ajahn Chah to die on his shift. You can understand why. So he said, no, we've got to resuscitate him. Never mind, leave him alone, he's just in jhanas. He said, no, he can't be, he stopped breathing, you'll die. He said, no, leave him alone. And they had this big argument, and they managed to come to a compromise. The male nurse would take blood samples every few minutes just to make sure that his blood was oxygenated. Because that's the only thing they want to make sure of. It doesn't matter if you're not breathing. As long as there's enough oxygen in the blood to supply the brain, there's no trouble. So they did this for 3 or 4 hours, and the male nurse found that there was always enough oxygen in the blood, even though he wasn't breathing. It was one of those very interesting experiments that were done on someone in jhanas, and why you don't need to breathe. Basically, the brain is so still, you're not using any oxygen, so it just goes round and round. Maybe the heart is using oxygen, but it's just such a low beat, you're hardly actually using much at all. So that's actually what happens when a monk like Ajahn Chah has got the mental disability of a stroke. Yeah, he can't speak, but he's still doing his meditation and having a wonderful time. So you don't have to worry about a thing. We know how to get jhanas. Where do you recommend we sense the breath? All over the body. What is a beautiful breath? The best place to sense the breath is in the big toe of your left foot. Oh, come on. I've said this many times. You don't notice the breath anywhere in your body. Don't locate it on your body. Just, you know you're breathing in, that's all. Where you're breathing in, who cares? As long as you know I am breathing in. As long as you know I'm breathing out. That's all. Keep it simple. Don't add any details which aren't necessary, such as where it's located. And if you do that, you're way ahead of the game. Because you haven't got so much body awareness, you've just got breath awareness. So when the breath gets very peaceful and calm, when the breath goes, the whole body is gone. But if you notice the breath at the tip of the nose or here, you've got body awareness, and it's very hard to drop the body. So to be able to let go of the body, please let it go as early as possible, so you just know the breath. I'm breathing in, I'm breathing out. That's enough. Don't concern yourself at all with where you're feeling the breath. Just as long as you're feeling the breath, that's enough. Was it? Was it something at the end? What is a beautiful breath? It is a delightful breath. You're breathing in and you're so happy. I will tell you now a little exercise. So close your eyes and breathe in the most delightful, sensual, lovely, gorgeous breath you can possibly breathe in, deliberately. Oh, that's nice. And breathe out the most ecstatic breath. Oh, that's great. Try that. You know, there's one of those great monks, Ajahn Gunha. That's all he teaches. Breathe in, sabai. Breathe out, sabai. Sabai is a Thai word, it means nice and easy and comfortable and lovely. And that's all he ever teaches. That's his whole meditation teaching. Breathe in, sabai. Oh yeah, I can take this. Breathe out, sabai. Oh yeah, give me more. Now that's called delightful breath. And a lot of times people think, is that Buddhism? Actually, it is. So actually, you're looking at the delightful breath. You're not forcing it. You're not trying to deny yourself happiness. You're allowing it to come and be happy. You like to go out, happy breath. And that becomes delightful breath. That usually happens quite naturally. But if it doesn't happen naturally, you can just do that. Breathe in, sabai. Oh, yeah. Breathe out, sabai. And really put effort into making it sabai. Yeah, I'm always fascinated when I see people in the kitchen doing their work. You mean you don't do any yourself? That's quite true. There is a saying that we cannot have more than one person in the kitchen, else it would create a mess. Therefore, I volunteer to be the one person who doesn't go in the kitchen. So I don't want to... No. But people in this retreat are so amazing, especially Bianca. By providing cooking and cleaning all the dishes so well and with silence. At my house, kitchen is always a place that has the most noise. Now that's interesting. So when you go back home, you can start doing the Bianca method of looking after the kitchen. So you can wash the dishes nice and calmly. And you'll find if you do that, lots of people will come to help. All nice and quiet. there'd be no noise. Wouldn't that be nice? So not only are you hearing, learning about how to meditate and how to become peaceful and how to become enlightened, you can also learn how to look after a kitchen. And you learn that at Jhana Grove Meditation and Kitchen Training Center. You know, it's much more happy when you do it silently. You get in all these conversations. Number one, you haven't got a clue what you're cleaning, what you haven't not cleaning. You're just busy talking to each other. Now, I do remember this. This is an absolutely true story. I'm sorry it's a Thai people, because you know, you are some of the kindest of people, always helping out. But I remember going past a monastery kitchen many years ago, looking through the window, and there were six Thai, it's many years ago, probably wasn't any of you here, six Thai girls were making our lunch. Only six people in that kitchen. All of them had their mouth open, talking. And because I was a scientist before, I worked out if six people are talking, and there's only six people in the kitchen, who's left to do the listening? And actually no one was doing the listening. They were all busy doing the talking. Have you ever been like that in your family? Everyone's doing the talking, no one's doing the listening. What a waste of time all that talking is. So you have to have one person silent doing the listening, for goodness sake. So if you're in a kitchen and everyone's talking, what a waste of time that is. So it's much better to be doing the listening. So, number two, I notice you don't eat a lot. I wonder why your size is above average. Is it because of meditation? Didn't I tell you that when you meditate, you get this experience of expanding, expanding, expanding? I've had that experience so many times meditating, feeling of expanding, 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 that actually that's what happened to the tummy. Now my problem is I don't worry enough. Because people tell me when you have anxiety and you worry about this and you worry about that, that's when you lose weight and become very thin. My trouble is I don't worry enough. So please tell me how to do some more worrying. But because you don't need to eat a lot, because you don't waste any energy, you sit down nice and peaceful and happy. But I must admit I did get worried once about my size, because this is absolutely true. I was standing in Dhammaloka in our center in Olamara. I was just standing there talking to someone. This Chinese girl came in and she rubbed my stomach for good luck. Oops. Anyway. Dear emptiness, what is the difference, or how do you know whether you have had an insight or is it just a good thought? If it's insight, it creates peace and happiness and lots of metta, like I said this morning. If you have got a great insight and it makes you angry, I've just seen the truth. Ajahn Brahm, you're wrong. What you say is wrong. Where? That's not insight. That's just more ideas. So real insight creates harmony and peace and calm. You know it by what it does for you. If it makes you more upset, more angry, more aggressive, that is not insight. I have very weak mind. Several times I had suicide feelings. I took medicines, but they made me so sleepy, so I did not take them. Please, how can I manage my feelings? Remember that story about the guy standing up on the ledge? You have a very weak mind. No, your mind is good enough. So I give you permission to have your mind exactly as it is. The reason we have depression, suicide, is because we don't love ourselves as we are. We always want to be different, something else. And that's the problem. So you love yourself as you are. You're fully respected. You belong here. You don't have to change one bit. When we want to change things, we're not content. That is the cause of anger, depression, suicide, whatever. So don't try and change yourself. Respect yourself and love yourself. Open the door of your heart to yourself. with all of your silliness and stupidity, just like I open the door of my heart to myself, with all my stupidity as well, and all my bad jokes. I love myself, not in spite of, with all the bad jokes. Like, it's been a few years now since I told the story of the two carrots. You're all vegetarians, so you can appreciate this story. There were two carrots, and they were walking down. So there's a few Thai people, and I give them a hard time about, you know, the kitchen and stuff. So there was two carrots walking down the streets in Bangkok. And you know what the traffic's like over there? One person riding in the traffic probably had too much Red Bull. They lost control of their car, and they went onto the pavement, and they hit one of the carrots. And he was very badly injured. The other carrot got on the mobile phone and rang the ambulance. And the ambulance came within a few minutes, a very good ambulance service in Bangkok. And the medics took one look at the injured carrot and said, "This is serious." So they put him in the back of the ambulance to rush him off to the hospital. And of course his friend, the other carrot, went with him. As soon as they went into the emergency room of the hospital, the triage nurses saw him and patched him up and said, "No, surgery." So he had to have emergency surgery. It was a matter of life and death. And those of you who have ever actually been to one of these hospitals, and your relation is in the ICU or is operation, you have to be in a waiting room. That's such a tense place. I've been in there many times with people whose loved one is on the edge of life and death. And it's a very tense atmosphere there because you can't do anything. The doctors are in there trying to do their very best, and you're just praying that it will all work out and your loved one will live. And that's what the friend, Mr. Carrot, was doing in there, pacing up and down, waiting for news. And when the doctor finally came in and said, "You must be this Mr. Carrot's friend, if he's easy to recognize, the only other carrot in the waiting room," he said, "I've got good news and bad news about your friend. And the good news is that actually the surgery was successful and your friend is going to live. The bad news is he's actually had a lot of brain damage, so your friend is going to be a vegetable for the rest of his life." Terrible joke. He's going to be a vegetable for the rest of his life. I love that joke. I don't care about you. So when you love yourself, I tell weak jokes. You have a weak mind, but just love yourself. And that way the negativity will come away from you. And you just love yourself for who you are. That's actually how you let go of the negativity. Every time I start listening to one of your talks, as interesting as they are, I feel sleepy and want to sleep. People actually tell me that. They actually, when they want to go to sleep at night, they put on one of my talks. And they always have a sound sleep. I still don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. At least it gives them a good night's sleep anyway. Instead it calms them down. They get very peaceful and calm. Okay. I feel sleep and want to sleep. I've come to one conclusion. You must come to bed with me every night. Not as my effort, as my cup. You can get me on your iPods, and then I will keep my precepts. So it actually works. It does send you to sleep. Dear Cyril Ajahn, is it okay for a vegetarian to cook and serve meat to loved ones who love meat? I don't see why not. Yeah, because look, when I was a vegetarian, I remember this, one of the terrible things which I did, really stupid. My girlfriend was going to give me a dinner one evening. So I went out to, she was cooking me a dinner. And she forgot I was a vegetarian. She cooked me meat. And I refused to eat it. And I really, really upset her. And that was the end of that relationship. And I looked back upon that and I thought, what a stupid thing that was. Because that girl went to a lot of trouble, really trying to get a good menu, trying to sort of spend hours trying to cook this meal for me. It was really healthy food. And I went there and I just refused to eat it. So, nowadays, if ever that happened again, I'd eat that meat. And then afterwards I just say, look, sorry about that, you know, I was a vegetarian. But never mind, you know, I really, you know, thank you for all that hard work you did making that meal for me. So that's what happened to me these days. I'm not a vegetarian these days, I have to eat whatever I've got. But that's actually what I would do. Yeah, it's okay to cook for your loved ones. What is the difference between skillful efforts in meditation and willpower? Skillful efforts is letting go of willpower. That is skillful. I know I've said this a long time, and I know you won't follow this. You will still exert your willpower, but just know every time you put willpower in, you may get a quick result, but then you won't get deep meditation. Quick results, yeah, willpower, you can actually stay with your breath. As I say, just like those soldiers at Buckingham Palace can stand for hours using their willpower, but not that long. And they're not peaceful. They just hold themselves controlling. So you can use your willpower, that's what you can get, but you can't get the deep meditations. You have to let go. Let go of desire. And that is a skillful effort. It's the effort to say no, the effort to restrain, the effort to make peace rather than fighting. Because it goes against your natural tendencies. Your natural tendencies is to make it happen. The effort is to stop that natural tendency and let it happen. It's hard to sit still under the mango tree with your hand out. You always want to do something. So that's the effort, to stay still, stop moving, stop interfering. And then it all happens. And you will experience that many times. You shake the mango tree, nothing falls. A lot of time, sometimes you just have to get frustrated. Oh, gee, nothing's happened. I give up. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to sit here. Then it happens. So often that's the case. You know, people get up, they've been really tired. Somebody said in an interview, really tired. And they got up really late for the first time. They come and sat, only 15 minutes. That won't work. They got a nice peaceful meditation. Another lady, she'd been meditating. This was in a retreat in Thailand. All 9 days, getting nowhere. And then the retreat ended. And then she had to wait for her taxi to the airport. She had an hour to kill. Didn't know what to do, so she decided to meditate, just to kill time. And afterwards she came up, Ajahn Brahm, oh, wonderful, thank you so much. She got her first really deep meditation, because she didn't expect anything, she was just killing time. Now that should actually tell you something. Using willpower, you waste your time. Letting go power. Wisdom power, that skillful effort to restrain, to say no, to say stop. Okay. It is because behind the motivation of skillful efforts is wholesome attainment. As for willpower, there lies control, wanting a more goal-orientated. Exactly. Thank you for your light-hearted delivery of the Dhamma. May you be well and happy. I intend to be well and happy, but I will not follow what you want. I'll do it myself. Dear Your Emptiness, why don't the monks laugh or smile? Eh? We do, I do. Are they in deep jhana or have they heard your jokes too many times? At least they don't complain. Of course I have to listen to my jokes many times, because that's where I train and I just refine it with them. And if you can make the monks laugh, then you're doing well. So I train it on the monks, and when I get the monks to laugh, then I can do it on you. Now the monks do laugh. The monks do have a lot of fun. I have a friend and a brother, and they're both very emotional persons. They easily get mad at any time. Sometimes they are good, caring and kind to you. However, they can suddenly change to be angry and scold me without any good reason. I feel so worried and insecure to stay with them, but I'm happy when they are treating me well. I always try to be patient and be kind to them, but I still feel very bad after they scold me or get mad at me. What can I do to this friend and to this brother? Should I stay away from them or practice strong loving kindness to them? When they scold you and they get mad at you, who's doing the wrong thing? Not your fault, it's them. So don't let their bad karma come into your heart. Just remember, they just must be crazy. They are the ones with mental disability. So if ever you've got a brother or a friend with mental disability, do you get upset at them? No, you have compassion to them. Poor thing, you've got some mental impairment. So this friend and brother just said, oh, you poor thing, you must have some mental impairment that you get angry and scold me for no reason. It's not your fault, it's their fault. So just don't bother about it. The only reason why you get upset when they scold you is you think you must be doing something wrong. Are you doing anything wrong? No, so it's no problem. So let it go. And then when they scold you, you can just smile. Thank you for scolding me. Yes. So because they're crazy, they're mad. The Ajahn, is Buddhism the only way to full enlightenment? Yep. It's not only Buddhism, it's only my way. It's only the Ajahn Brahm method. The Ajahn Brahm method at Jhana Grove, taught at Jhana Grove, is the only way to full enlightenment. Well, how does that sound? It really sucks. No, what the Buddha said was really wise. When somebody asked him, he said, is this the only way to become enlightened in Buddhism and you're following your teaching? Well, the Buddha said, look, it doesn't matter what you call your religion. If you follow the Eightfold Path, then you'll become enlightened. It's not what you call the religion. It's not the name of your teacher. It's not what books you read, or whether it's Mahayana, Theravada, or Hahayana. That's my religion, of course. It's what you do. If you follow the Eightfold Path and you call yourself a fundamentalist Muslim, it doesn't matter. If you're following the Eightfold Path, you'll become enlightened. It's what you do. So that's actually where you can find full enlightenment, only by following the Eightfold Path. Or can yogis and people of religion become our hearts too? For example, you say that Sufism is very close to Buddhism, thanks. Yeah, it's just what you do, not really what you say. What's one of those other Sufi stories? Oh yeah, one of my favourite other stories of this guy Nasruddin was, you know, he was a heretic. That's why I like sort of Nasruddin. He always gets into trouble, like I get into trouble every now and again, like for ordaining nuns. But in those days, if you sort of got into trouble, it was usually big trouble. This was in Persia he lived, where the Sufis were. And he did something which was accused of heresy, and the Shah had to investigate, and he said, I'm sorry, but there's no way out. You have actually acted heretical against the Holy Quran. You have to be executed. And the Shah liked this man. He was always good fun to have around. But, he said, I've got to follow the law. You have to be executed. And this guy knows me. He said, oh, that's just a great shame. I was just about to teach your donkey how to fly. And that was such a weird thing to say. The Shah said, what do you say? Well, I was about to teach, you know, your majesty's donkey how to fly through the air. He said, can you do that? He said, yeah, of course I can. I was just going to do it. But now you're executing me. Never mind. And the Shah said, look, I'll do a deal with you. I will commute your execution for 12 months so you can teach my donkey how to fly. And if he flies, then I'll forgive you, pardon you. But if he can't fly, then I'll execute you. And Nasruddin said, okay, fine, deal. And as he walked away, his friend said, I never knew you could teach donkeys how to fly. And this guy Nasruddin said, of course, no one can teach donkeys how to fly. It's just making it up. Why do you do that for? Look, I've got an extra 12 months to live. In those 12 months, I could die of a heart attack. The Shah could die of a revolution. I could be free. Who knows? The future's uncertain. I've just got 12 extra months. That was a very, very wise person. Another time, they said, Nasruddin, you're so wise. Do you know how many stars there are in the sky? He said, yeah, of course I know that. Well, how many? He said, look, come out tonight and I'll tell you. So the Shah came out as well. Because it was amazing. Someone knows how many stars there are in the sky. So he came out with the Shah and the guy who asked the question. He said, okay, now tell us, how many stars are in the sky? He said, okay, I'll ask His Majesty the Shah to point to a star and I'll pull one hair out. Because that's how many stars there are in the sky. Exactly the same as there are hairs in your head. And I'll prove it to you because His Majesty can point to a star, I'll pull one hair out, another star, I'll pull a second hair out. By the time we get to the last star, I'll be on your last hair. Now, it really hurts to have your hair pull out. So the guy said, actually, I think you're correct. No need to do it. I accept that that's how many stars there are in the sky. So this really smart guy with all his smart answers, which is why that sort of... the other one, which is my predecessor, Ajahn Chakra, liked this story of Nasruddin. He found this Nasruddin with a big pile of chili peppers. And he was crying and red in the face, like you, what happens when you eat too many chilies? And his friend said, you know, how many chilies have you eaten? He said, well, about 50 or 60 already. My goodness, what are you doing that for? He said, because I'm looking for the sweet one. Now that is a very profound story in life. That's why people are on their fourth or fifth marriage. What are you doing that for? I'm looking for the sweet one. Crying and crying and crying. You won't find it. Chili peppers are hot. Relationships are hot as well. But I'm looking for the right one. I know that right boy is out there for me somewhere. I know he's there. Now, they're all the same boys. You should know that by now, for goodness sake. Dear mighty monk. That's getting better. Mighty monk. Please, kindly please hold 15 days retreat. 9 days is not enough. Gee, you give people 9 days, they always want more. No pleasing some people. Isn't it getting better? Wonderful all-knowing, Ajahn Brahm. Will I ever find true love in this lifetime? Preferably by the end of this week. Will it help if I touch the Buddha inside the stupa? Be careful of that stupa at night time. You know those bobtail lizards? That's where they live. You might go, ow, ow! You get bitten. Is love true? Or is love false? It's very interesting. They call it true love. There's no such thing as true love. And I'll tell you why. If you're romantic, leave now. Sometimes people tell me that they've found true love. They say they love their partner so much and their partner loves them. And all they want in life is for their partner to be happy. And their partner's happiness is the most important thing for them. That's true love. And I say, really? I say, yeah. The only thing I want in my life is I get so much happiness seeing my partner happy. Okay, I'll give you a test, I say. Suppose after this retreat, you go home and you find your partner has run away to Bali with your best friend for a sexy weekend. How would you feel? If your partner's happiness was the most important thing in the world for you, you'd be overjoyed. Oh, my partner is with my best friend having wonderful sex with them. I'm so overjoyed that they're having such an amazing, wonderful time. Oh, thank you. If you can do that, then that's called true love. Can you do that? No way! I'm fighting for divorce. I'm gonna... So that's what my acid test of true love, and it doesn't exist. Dear Ajahn, clean Catholic joke. If it's a clean joke, it's not funny. No, I'll read it anyway. Yes, it probably is. An old nun. That's a nun joke. I've got lots of nun jokes. An old nun was living in a convent next... Oh, I know this one. It's a good one. An old nun who was living in a convent next to a construction site noticed the coarse language of the workers and decided to spend some time with them to correct their evil ways. So it's a nice nun trying to get these Australian building workers, like we've got a few over there, trying to teach them how to speak nice. She decided she would take her lunch, sit with the workers and talk with them. She put her sandwich in a brown paper bag, and walked over to the spot where a group of men were eating their lunch. Smiling, she walked up to the group and asked, "Do you men know Jesus Christ?" The workers shook their heads and looked at each other, very confused. Then one of the workers looked up into the steelworks above where there were many other workers and yelled out, "Anyone up there know Jesus Christ?" One of the steel workers yelled out, "Why?" And the worker yelled back, "'Cause your wife's here with your lunch." That's what I like. There's lots of nice nun jokes. This is one a little bit rude, but it's very, very funny. About the priest goes to the convent, and he noticed one of the nuns is getting a bit fat in the middle. He says, "What's that? You're getting a bit of a bulge in your abdomen there." He said, "Oh, it's gas. I've got indigestion, it's gas." And the priest is suspicious, but okay, I believe you. A month later, he goes back again, and it's even bigger. He said, "What is that?" "Oh, I told you, it's gas, I've got gas problem." "You sure?" He said, "Yeah, indigestion, gas." Okay, fair enough. When he goes back the next month, he sees that nun having a baby in a stroller. You know what the bulge was. And the priest looks over that little baby and says, "Cute little fart, isn't it?" Yes. Yeah, we all know. Anyway. What do you recommend? Get married, have children, or become a monk? I'm in two minds, seriously. If you're in two minds, you must have schizophrenia. Now, do you want to get married and have kids and have to wake up all in the middle of the night? Don't listen. Okay, this has got... Oh, they've got one of these Ajahn Super Monk Bouncing with Bliss. Someone has been one of these... That's right. I think it's one of these. If you flick it hard enough, you get sort of the movement. So that's not me. I'm not that fat. Come on. Love the baby. Thank you. Somebody must be so bored with their meditation. Actually, it does work. You can have a look at it afterwards, but it looks like me jumping up and down. Big exercise. So, very good. Sometimes when people can't meditate, they write instead. That's very nice of you. I'll leave this in the kitchen so you can play around with it later on and about to see it actually works, jumping up and down. So, that's it for this evening. That's the questions and answers. There's only one more Q&A session left tomorrow. So, any questions you have, you better write them down tomorrow, because this will be your last chance to get your questions answered. So, or you can come on interviews tomorrow, whichever you like. So thank you again for listening. Have a wonderful evening and see you tomorrow, maybe.